Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Astros take 2 out of 3 from the Rangers over the weekend. That was good to see. They looked much more like the normal Astros team over the weekend. And really, even the Sunday game, which looked a little closer than it actually was, 8-5. Seth Martinez gave up a 3-run home run in the 9th inning. They were up 8-2 in that game. Unfortunately, Josh Hader had to actually pitch on Sunday, but he came in, got the last out, struck out Corey Seager to end the game. So that it was way more like they drew it up on the chalkboard Saturday and Sunday. So hopefully that carries over to this week. I would say, and we'll get to this week in a little bit, but Seth, the three things that Astro fans are monitoring right now, outside of just night to night watching baseball, the I'll call it the Loperfido situation down down in Sugarland, where Joey Loperfido is just, I mean, tearing the cover off the ball. He's been the most productive minor league hitter across that layer of baseball. He's got 10 home runs. As the Astros were having another game in which they were giving up double-digit runs on Friday and losing in grand fashion, Loperfido was hitting 3 home runs for Sugarland. He hit another one on Saturday. He's by trade an outfielder. He's been playing some first base. They told him in spring training, get that first base glove ready, which maybe shows what they kind of knew about their situation at the big league level with the first base situation. I thought it was interesting. You know, Jeff Bagwell was on the call this weekend on Space City Home Network. Jeff Blum was on vacation. I think Jeff Blum was at the Masters, if I'm not mistaken. Jeff Bagwell was in the booth this weekend, and on Saturday, they got into a conversation, he and Todd Callis, about Loperfido. And Bagwell said the first thing he did when he got home on Friday night was fire up the film of Loperfido's game in Sugarland on Friday night.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like it's a huge surprise. It's not like the Astros fans are the only ones who have been monitoring Loperfido.
Right.
You'll be happy to know that both Dana Brown and Jeff Bagwell know who Loperfido is.
Yes.
And are seemingly excited about him. I think that the thing about Loperfido that's kind of interesting and unique is that he's built on his game so much and is very much a late bloomer that I'm guessing there's a part of the Astros in the organization that just want to take a step back and really just figure out, okay, how much of this is real, how much of this could potentially, you know, involve a step back at some point. He still strikes out a bunch, but he's got all this power. And every time we hear his name, it's almost like, oh yeah, he had 7 home runs last night in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. It's a report such as that. It's really hard for me as somebody who doesn't want to watch another single Jose Abreu at bat. Yet at the same time, I've also watched all of these minor league pitchers get called up and get thrashed and wonder, All right, man. I know they don't have any choice right now, but my God, this can't be good for their development. I feel like Lo Perfido is, you got to try to see the forest for the trees and not bring him up in a moment of panic just because he's playing so well right now.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be up anytime soon. If I had to guess, you got to let this hot streak play out and then see if there's a... You got to see where his settle-in zone is. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's on this incredible hot streak right now. These things never last. So... What does it look what does normal look like? Because this is abnormal. What does normal look like for him? And how does he, you know, like how does he respond to pitch even at that level, pitchers making adjustments to him and whatnot?
Plus, I mean, like you gotta looking at the big picture, think about all right, what is the greatest ailment for this team right now? And is Lo Perfido the guy that's going would Lo Perfido have given you a more lopsided record? I know, like, obviously, you don't think about that with any other. The pitching is the issue, is what I'm trying to say, Sean. I mean, you've got literal minor league pitchers out there giving up 6 and 7 runs in a third of an inning. That's kind of a big deal right now. If Lo Perfido can't pitch, he does nothing for what really, really ails the Astros right now.
Yep. So we're monitoring that. We're keeping an eye on Lo Perfido. And then I would say the other two things, Seth, that Astro fans are tracking here are the two injuries to their aces, their co-aces, we'll call them. You got really good news on both fronts this weekend. We'll start with Fromber. Fromber's injury is not believed to be serious. He could be back by the Washington series, which is this Friday, starts this Friday, or the series against the Cubs, which starts next week. Now, we should point out that the Astros are heading into a part of their schedule, whereas by Wednesday they will have played 20 games in 21 days. Like the injuries in this pitching staff are coming literally like at the worst possible time schedule wise because they have no days off the first 3 weeks of the season. Starting on Thursday, they go into like a 12 or 13 day period where they have four different days off throughout there. They're off this Thursday and then they're off again on Monday. They're off on a Friday in a couple of weeks. So they've got a bunch of days off here. Now, if they had their normal depth of pitching rotation, I would say, okay, well, there's no need to rush Fromber back. You can easily go with a five-man rotation, but they don't even have five guys you can trust right now. You know what I mean? Whereas in the past, you'd be like, oh, okay, well, they don't have to rush him back because, you know, Ronel Blanco is your fifth starter and he's trusted, whatever. They've got two guys they can trust right now. It's Ronel Blanco and Christian Javier, and that's it. So the schedule, while the schedule is quirky, and normally it would allow you to be a little more patient, I don't know that you can be patient necessarily with this.
I mean, one of those Fridays that they're missing is so they can travel to Mexico City. So that's like, I mean, the weirdness of that comes into, that's April 26th, they don't play because they're traveling to Mexico City. And I think with Fromber, Verlander might pitch on Friday. It feels like with Fromber, it's been framed kind of like, hey, he might be back before Mexico City, so which would be April 27th. I'd imagine it'd be nice for Urquidy if he's like, Urquidy's only one of several Mexican-born players in Major League Baseball. It'd be nice for Urquidy if he could come back by that point.
Yeah.
But I'm not. That's not pushing for that or anything.
No.
So that's the. These guys coming back in a period when perhaps you'll get a few extra breaks from the schedule, that might get it feeling a little bit more like normal. And they are like you got to remember they're dead last in the AL West right now. They gotta recapture some ground. Playing at a 500 clip right now, well, everybody's as banged up as possible, isn't going to feel all that great in the standings.
Verlander threw 77 pitches in his second rehab start for the Hooks over the weekend. His numbers stunk again, but I have a hard time getting too worked up about this. 4 innings pitch, 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 3 strikeouts, 2 wild pitches, and 2 pitch clock violations as well. He checked every box on that bingo card, baby.
Bagwell had a nice story about one of his injury stints in the minors and just about how it was cool because you hear from his perspective where he's also, he is always just like brutally honest about when he hasn't played well. And he was talking about how just, yeah, he was injured. They put him ninth because the minor league team was still in the playoff race at that point. And, he just flat out said, I don't know these guys. Like, I didn't know, like, you're out there, you're still injured, you're trying to hit against pitchers that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
And, like, likewise with the pitchers, you know, Verlander's gonna work on what he's working on. If the minor leaguers figure out that he's throwing a changeup or what have you, then, you know, or he's working on that, they're going to sit on it. So, yeah, you have to worry. I think with Verlander especially, he's, like a lot of pitchers, kind of brutally honest about everything. Like, him giving a positive appraisal afterwards is all I care about. I don't care about the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, he threw 77 pitches, so he hit his target on pitches. He felt good afterwards. Those are the big things. Yeah. And by the way, I feel like he's the benevolent Justin Verlander, because think of how many minor leaguers he has now given a story to over these last two starts that can say, I once got a hit off of Justin Verlander.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Like, I think he gave up 7 hits in the last start as well. He gave up 7 in this one. I'm guessing they weren't spread over 14 different guys. There's probably a couple in there that had multiple hits against Justin Verlander, but he made, let's just call it 10 minor leaguers a little more interesting 10 years from now, 15
yeah.
years from now.
He's a Johnny Appleseed of positive memories for minor
That's
leagues.
What I was looking for, yeah. He's a Johnny Appleseed.
Uh-huh.
So that'll be good. You get Fromber back, you get Verlander back. Like seven. We're a tenth of the way into the season here, almost exactly. They're 6-11. We're a tenth of the way into the season. And as I'm looking at it, you're 6-11. You go, okay, which of these things that have ailed them so far are going to sustain, and which ones
right.
can get fixed? Right?
Okay. So yeah, you're trying your hardest to be positive. I don't know how somehow you and I had reversed roles over the last couple of weeks, and you've become the cynical one. Tell me if you think these things are reversible or not.
Okay.
Abreu. Looking like Abreu from September last year.
No, we don't need to waste breath
Why?
On this. No.
Well, yeah, Sean, last year in September, 26 games, he had 7 home runs, had an .835 OPS.
Yeah.
Do you not believe that Abreu is capable of that?
My feelings on Abreu are well documented.
Abreu in the postseason last year, Sean.
What was he in the postseason, Seth?
He had .296, had an OPS of .945.
Okay. I have a hard time looking at Jose Abreu, that's all. I hope it happens. They are going to give Jose Abreu all the runway he needs. Like, anybody who's hoping that a DFA is going to happen here, that he's going to get cut, designated for assignment in mid-May or something like that, you better buckle up. You better have plenty of whiskey handy, man, because he's going to be around for a while.
All right, okay, now let's see. Is this reversible? At the very least, let's say if Abreu doesn't turn it around to where he was in September through the playoffs last year.
Yeah, yeah.
If he doesn't turn it around, if you continue to have this situation where your catchers can be your backup first baseman,
mm-hmm.
do you feel better about the way that Dana Brown handled the first base position in the offseason, including having John Singleton be your go-to dude?
I don't know. I guess it depends on what other solutions are out there. Like, people keep bringing up Brandon Belt's name. He's still out there as a free agent. He's better than both of these guys, obviously. But as you pointed out last week when we played that audio from it was Reggie Jackson, where he's like, oh, Blake Snell, you know, just got a little too expensive for us. That's not what we're going to spend the money on. And as you pointed out, it's like, well, yeah, you can't, because you've got a $19 million black hole vortex at first base with Jose Abreu. So I Caratini and Yiner Diaz, that by the time September rolls around, that might be the solution, is that you're using, you know, you're doing some sort of janky first base catcher thing with both of those guys. I don't know what it is. I do know that the manager right now has very little confidence in Jose Abreu, and this is where I will give Joe Espada credit. Mm-hmm. Is that not every decision he's made has been the right one, and the pinch hitting Singleton stuff that he's done has been a little weird. But, and this isn't me, people get worked up when we bring up Dusty's name, but Dusty kept Jose Abreu at cleanup in the five hole for the first 2 months of the season while he had an OPS in the 500s.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Espada is looking at things quickly here and going, no, you're in the eight hole. And the only reason you're not in the nine hole is because we don't want to bat you in front of Jose Altuve
and ruin it for him. Yeah.
Like, that's he's the worst hitter in the lineup. And thankfully, Joe Espada is treating him like he should, the worst hitter in the lineup.
Abreu is, you're bad enough that we can't put you ninth. Not when we're also batting Yordan second. That's the trouble with batting Yordan second. I'm a fan of it so far. But yeah, batting Yordan second. Boy, in getting to the point now, it's so nice when you see Yordan intentionally walked or pitched around, and then Tucker comes up to the plate and hits a home run. That's pretty nice.
Yes.
That's pretty cool to see. I know, spreading them out, this, that, the other thing, but it's also nice to see the psychological warfare of those guys right like that. I learned something this weekend, Sean, that I'm impressed with for the Astros. It's this. You remember Sean Dubin, the reliever who came in on Saturday? Was it Friday or Saturday? Saturday he came in and pitched one scoreless inning.
Yep.
Two strikeouts and a line out after
Gorgeous
that.
Gorgeous beard, yes.
He's from near my wife's hometown.
Okay.
And I was talking to, and I knew Dubin was a late bloomer, but I was talking to my nephew, and I'd forgotten my nephew had played against Dubin in high school. And my nephew was like, yeah, I mean, he didn't throw faster than 80 in high school. Like, it was, he was a good pitcher, but it was like there was nothing about Dubin that people looked at and thought like, yeah, that guy's gonna be in the majors some year. So the Astros, this is yet another story of a guy, even though he went through the conventional route of, you know, playing
drafted,
college, all that stuff and everything, he could end up being like Sean Dubin, who comes from this little redneck town, might be exactly like all the Latin American, prospects who were signed after everybody else thought they were over the hill.
The glitch in the matrix, is upstate New York.
I think he grew. I think my nephew. I don't know. I'll have to fact check my nephew on this. He was saying that Dubin actually grew after college, like grew in height after college.
Really?
Yeah.
True late bloomer. Man, that's wild. Got a great beard, too.
I haven't fact-checked that, everybody, yet.
And I feel like 80, they were probably teeing off on him even in high school at 80 miles an hour, you know? Like, that's...
I'm sure he had really good stuff for...
Probably. Good movement. Yeah, good movement.
He said not faster than... I don't know if he meant in the 80s or what have you.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We acknowledge every Monday, 7:25-ish, we acknowledge big performance from the weekend. In this case, big performance from the season. We've got a few that we'll get to here coming up next. It is Acknowledge Me. Stay there.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, 7:24 on a Monday. It means we acknowledge me. We acknowledge big performances. That's what we do this time each week. And we start with Ranel Blanco.
Acknowledge me.
We will acknowledge Ranel Blanco because he is basically the Astros MVP 1/10 of the way through the season. I don't know if it'll hold up, but it sure has been fun to watch. Now, he did unfortunately give up a couple runs this time in his outing on Saturday. So the shutout streak is over for Ranel Blanco. But, man, we know that streak he had of not giving up a hit. First 44 outs of the season before giving up a hit. And was able to kind of steady things after being a little bit shaky early. And most importantly, after a week in which you had multiple pitchers get knocked out early, yeah. I mean, two of them could not have been knocked out almost any earlier. You had a third of an inning on Monday from Henley. Hunter Brown, two-thirds of an inning in his start a little later on in the week on Thursday. You needed to get six innings out of Ronel Blanco on Saturday.
In the five games prior to Saturday, Astros starting pitchers had combined to throw 13 and a third innings and allow 31 earned runs.
I mean, that is the type
in
of...
In five games, yeah. The starters had 13 and a third innings in five games.
Five starts.
Like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
For a staff that's dealing with a ton of injuries right now. You know, like, it's not like they're doing it for a staff that's at... It's at full strength, so that's and you know what? Let's acknowledge Christian Javier real quick as well.
Yeah.
Acknowledge me,
because Christian Javier gave you seven innings on Sunday. Those two performances, forget about the fact that they were wins, which is obviously, you know, ultimately that's the most important thing. But the ability of those two to give you 13 of the necessary 18 innings to get through Saturday and Sunday early on here. Might be one of the most underrated developments of the season for a taxed bullpen.
And Blanco, you know what's been the most frustrating thing about all of this has been that the pitchers have been bad, yes. But even as it was with Blanco on Saturday, some of these little bloop, slow hit balls have just crushed the Astros at times. And he had two of his two hits that he gave up early in that game were like 71 miles per hour off the bat. They were nothing at all, Blanco. So that's a little bit of the bad luck. Don't get me wrong. There's been a lot of bad pitching as well. But those two guys being able to just eat innings and be a source of strength right now is you can't understate how important that is as you are currently trailing the A's by a half game. Just remember, you're trailing the A's by a half game. My God.
Yep. Atlanta comes to town next 3 days. They will not see Ronel Blanco nor Christian Javier. It'll be Spencer Arrighetti, Hunter Brown, and J.P. Franz. These are three really big starts for these three guys. I mean, these are, especially Hunter Brown, like of the three, like Hunter, of these three guys, Hunter Brown is the one that has the most, I think, invested in them, at least emotionally and kind of planning-wise invested in them. This is a huge start for Hunter Brown. Just in terms of looking good again, I don't know that he's going to lose his spot in the rotation anytime soon. I don't know that any of these guys will because of the injuries. You know,
you can get mad at Hunter Brown. You can't get mad. I can't get mad at Spencer Arrighetti.
No.
I'm just hoping for his second out. You know, like, hey, let's keep stacking outs. Maybe someday you'll put three of them together in one inning.
Stacking those O's. We're stacking O's, baby. Yeah.
Please get an out and. Less than the first 20 minutes of the game.
Yeah, well, the solid pitching from the weekend allowed us to enjoy and acknowledge some of the offensive performances that have been really through the first 17 games outstanding so far, including maybe chief among them, Jose Altuve.
Acknowledge me.
Acknowledge the great Jose Altuve, who is, as Michael Schwab points out in a tweet, already off to a better start than 2017 when he won the MVP. Now, that was a season where Jose Altuve, his hot streak was in July. Like, he hit like 540 for the month of July. Right now, thus far, through 17 games, he is batting .382, five home runs, seven RBIs. So most of his RBIs have come from hitting bombs. Hit two solo home runs yesterday. He's got an OPS of .1183. Jose Altuve, Seth, shows no signs of slowing down. It does make me think back to last year a little bit, like, this is what the Astros were missing because of the World Baseball Classic last year. You know, in the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah,
they didn't have to weather that storm this year. Jose Altuve's been healthy from jump, you know.
Tell you, I can't believe you brought up the WBC and now I'm angry all over again. You're right. Yeah, the Altuve who gets off to fast starts, we were robbed of that last year.
Yep.
And there's no excuse for that World Baseball Classic ever again.
That's right.
Yeah, versus Eovaldi, he's got seven home runs versus Eovaldi. He doesn't have more than three versus any other pitcher in baseball. He just flat out owns Eovaldi. Eovaldi, who had – this is where it's extra important. Eovaldi had a couple of nice games versus the Astros in the playoffs. So for both – for both Altuve and Yordan and everybody else to come and smack Eovaldi around a little bit to allow the Astros to now have a winning record over the Rangers in the race for the silver boot. It's more clutch than it needs to be this early in the season.
No doubt. The seven home runs that Altuve has against Eovaldi, I believe they showed a graphic. I think it's the third most that any one player has against any one pitcher in baseball and currently, you know,
active players.
One of the top two was Santana from the I believe from the Twins has nine against Verlander of all things.
I bet one of them is also Abreu was really good versus Verlander too. I believe
he wasn't on the graphic. Yeah,
he wasn't. Okay.
Yeah, not for home runs. So he wasn't on there. Somebody has a bunch against Gerrit Cole. I forget. There were a lot of Astro ties on that graphic they showed on Space City. Anyways, Altuve, great start, Jose Altuve. So we acknowledge you.
Abreu's got six home runs versus Verlander.
There you go.
It's 388. 1261 OPS. If we could just get Abreu up there versus Verlander a couple times,
that's
I feel like we'd be okay.
That's why he stinks. He can't bat against Verlander anymore. He's his teammate now.
He's got a 1261 OPS versus Verlander.
Verlander should be ashamed of himself.
The one thing we have that could help is if we could get a game against Verlander. Yes, and he selfishly is staying on the Astros roster. Jeez. Thanks a lot.
All right, let's get to some more acknowledgments. Amen Thompson.
Acknowledge me.
Rockets rookie. First career triple-double yesterday against the Clippers. This is more an acknowledgement. We'll talk about the Rockets a little bit in the next segment, but just an acknowledgement. I mean, Amen Thompson is kind of the face of this acknowledgement here, which is really for the young guys on this basketball team, man. Like, this looks like it's going to be a nice young core heading into the offseason with Fred VanVleet as the veteran guy kind of steering the ship. I love the direction this Rockets team is going. And Amen Thompson, I think you can make an argument behind Victor Wembanyama might be the second best rookie in the NBA this year. He was outstanding. Yeah. If he can develop any sort of mid-range game, like any sort of jump shot, he's going to be a really, really – he already is a really good player. He's going to be something else.
Well, and you look at what they asked him to do this year, which is to play off-ball and to develop off-ball, something he had never done in his entire life. That's a lot, you know, that's a lot to do in a team where you've got another couple other young stud draft picks that garner more attention at times. You get a credit to him just to be able to just put in that work and become a different type of player.
Yep.
And also yet at the same time, you're able to look at him and say, oh, wow, this is just the beginning really for him being utilized in that role as often as he was.
We'll talk more about the Rockets in the next segment. Season's over. What got accomplished this year? We've got a short list of things. After two seasons before this, it felt like they accomplished nothing other than getting more high draft picks, which was probably the goal to begin with. Felt good to actually come up with a fairly lengthy list of things that got accomplished this year with the Rockets. Speaking of the Rockets, Boban.
We're going to acknowledge
Boban for feeding people yesterday. Free Chick-fil-A for the crowd out in Los Angeles. And this is a state that is in tough economic times right now. These are people that are very heavily taxed. So they need the free meals from Chick-fil-A.
I didn't realize it was this much of a gesture by Boban.
Benevolent Boban marriage. He's just Boban to me.
Boban's at the line. The Rockets are up by seven or
they're,
so.
With 105, I looked it up. 105-97 with 4:44 to go. Is what
it was 104 to 97.
105-97, yeah.
105-97.
Yep.
With 4:44 to go.
Yep.
Okay.
And
so not in the range where you should just be sacrificing free throws, except for this is for free chicken.
When Sean Pendergast is laying four on the Rockets, he shouldn't be doing this. He shouldn't be doing anything intentionally missing free throws. Not saying he did, but he misses the first. If you miss, if an opposing player misses two free throws, you get free Chick-fil-A. Here's what it sounded like.
Fans are getting excited here. There might potentially be some free chicken on the board if he misses the second free throw.
Oh, man, free chicken on the board.
Yeah, so that's why the fans are getting a little frothy.
Oh, they're pointing to you. Boban's playing with the crowd. Say, you want chicken?
Here's your job.
No, he gave him chicken. He's a man of the people. He's a man of the people.
You think he did that on purpose?
He did. He gave out free chicken.
That was a great call.
he was saying to the crowd, "I got you, yeah. I got you." And I don't, you know, without lip reading too much, I don't know. Maybe
he said it's
in
me at one
tongue.
Point. He said yeah, it's me.
It's me. Know? He was doing fooling the Jamie Tart or the yeah. I don't know if he did it intentionally or not. I know. Listen. I've seen the social media response. I know this is one of those things where you're supposed to act like you're too cool to care about winning. I get that. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, you're the old grumpy guy who cares. Now, listen, personally, I don't want one of the veteran players on my team intentionally missing free throws as a crowd pleaser with 4 minutes left in the game. You're up by eight in the NBA. That can vanish in moments. I don't care how many backups are playing for the Clippers at this point. I think it was Boban masterfully, A, understanding that he's not the world's best free throw shooter. So there's a really good chance he was going to miss the second one. But he was going to play it up. And either if it didn't go in, then he's a hero. If it doesn't go in, then he trolled them magnificently.
Yes.
Because he's not a good enough free throw shooter to intentionally just hit the left side of the rim and have it barely bounce out. Right. He's not good enough to miss like that.
Although, that fourth quarter, he was basically Nikola Jokic yesterday. Like, he was Boban. I mean, granted, I know it's against Clipper backups, all of whom are a foot shorter than him. But, man, he was 13 points in 12 minutes, 8 rebounds. Mm-hmm. Boban was a beast yesterday. But, yeah, dude, I had the Rockets -4. And before you all go, Sean, you're betting on game 82 of an NBA. You're betting on any NBA basketball. You got some D-gen qualities to you. You're betting on the last game of the season. My feeling was the Clippers are sitting everybody, and I think the Rockets wanted to finish 500 on the season. I feel strongly about that. I feel like the Rockets, even though they had a bunch of G Leaguers in there in the fourth quarter, I felt strongly that. I was right. Ultimately, they won by 11. They covered the number. Boban. I'm looking at him. I'm like, no, Boban. I don't need you missing free throws intentionally.
By the way, Boban. Boban's got a cure. You know, usually people, like a lot of big men, get better at free throw shooting over the course of their career.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like Hakeem or what have you.
Sure.
He's actually gotten worse over the course of his career. Well, he's had some seasons where he was like 81% from the free throw line or so. But he's this year is 64% from the free throw line.
How many minutes did he play this year?
He didn't get a lot of attempts this year. Okay, so that's not necessarily all that fair. the play time has a lot to do with it. Yeah. I'll grant you that, Sean.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Monday. Acknowledge me. We acknowledge the performances. Let's dig deeper into the Rockets. What are the most significant things the Rockets accomplished this season? Didn't accomplish their goal of getting into the play-in, but I think they accomplished some things that should have people very, very excited for 2024-25. What are the most significant accomplishments the Rockets had this season? That is coming up next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Rockets finished 41-41. Felt like they got some good work done. You know, sometimes you got a project you're doing and it takes you a day or two and you look up afterwards. You're like, you know, we got some good work done here today, some quality work. This was a longer endeavor. This was 82 separate days that they accomplished this, but I would say, I would look around, Seth, in 41-41, and I would say, we got some good work accomplished here this year.
I feel like they're in the middle of a house flipping project that maybe wasn't the project they had planned on when they first bought the house, but the foundation is okay. There's no cracks in the foundation, and you've stripped out the old flooring. You've gotten rid of any of the black mold. You've gotten rid of the rodents, all of that. You know, I don't know. I don't know which, like, pick whichever player you want. Who are the rodents? Who's
Kevin
the mole?
Porter Jr. and Christian Wood. Yes, they were the rodents.
And now you feel like you've stripped the thing down. You've got it all dried in. You've got the roof patched. And you feel like, all right, we might be able to really start doing some stuff here.
You can see the makings of a good house coming together. Yeah.
You know what you could do? You could slip. My dad used to do this a lot. So there used to be the point where, like, when we'd go to visit my dad on the weekends, we're like, all right, we're going to be sleeping in one of dad's fixer uppers. Is there heat? Is there a toilet? More times than not, the answer was no. So I feel like I'm already doing better than I did in my childhood because I'm sleeping in a Rockets house that has a toilet.
They have a toilet?
And has heat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There we go. And without fear of snakes or rodents or anything.
Yeah. I think like I can look at this and go, this thing is starting to come together a little bit. We
are not pooping in 5-gallon buckets anymore.
No, that was
you hear me, everybody?
2 years ago.
We're pooping in a toilet with the Rockets.
Damn straight. I would say so the biggest things that they accomplished this season, I think, to me, independent of any individual, and we'll talk about individual players in a second, Seth, I think this team started to establish some toughness. I think especially over the second half of the season when it looked like teams were really trying to either intimidate or get under the Rockets' skin.
I would say
sometimes it was successful they got under the Rockets' skin, but I like the fact that the Rockets were chippy about it. I like the fact that the Rockets didn't take any crap from anybody. I like that there were ejections going on. I think Ime Udoka himself.
No, of course. Yeah, 100%. Yes. Yeah. Half the time his coaching tips were more fighting tips than anything else.
That's right.
And it felt very much like Slapshot, I think, where you know what? You lose the battle, but it's part of an effort towards winning the war. Sometimes you just get, you know, we gotta do something here. We gotta have guys something to hang their hat on. Yeah, let's get aggressive. Let's get chippy. Maybe a few guys get ejected. Maybe you don't win that game, but the larger element and the more important thing is that you feel like these guys are starting to congeal around each other. And then you talk about toughness. Jalen Green played every damn game.
He did.
In this era of load management, Jalen Green, who at times when he was a younger player. Even though he's still young now, we weren't always sure he was even awake during interviews. Mm-hmm. He was out there playing every damn game this year.
Yep.
That's not something that I was told the younger folks had an interest in. I was told that all they wanted to do was play video games and weigh in on the environment. That's all. That's all they want to do. No, Jalen Green out there for 82 straight games.
Let's see what he's doing when he's 26, not 21. If he's still doing the 82 game thing, we'll see. But yeah, 82 games. Admirable, but I think that's the biggest thing. I think you say that about D'Amico Ryans and Ime Udoka. You know, D'Amico had Swarm. I don't know what the acronym is that Ime was using behind the scenes, if there was one, but whatever that ethos was that they were trying to impart on the team and the culture throughout, not just on the team, but throughout the building, I think both those coaches have been successful in doing that. That's, to me, A, number one. Number two, for me, and we'll stick with Jalen Green here for a second, he showed that at least for a long period during the season here, the month of March, that he has that elite scorer in a winning effort kind of club in his bag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's averaged over 20 a game before in his career. He averaged 22 a game last year. Those were largely meaningless, inefficient points. He had a nice long stretch, a lot of it without Şengün, which certainly makes this offseason very interesting, but where he showed that he can go score 30, 35, 40 points for you, but do it in a way that involves teammates and affects winning.
Involves teammates, affects winning. I think if they allow that stretch where they were playing bad teams and going small to affect how they feel about Şengün, then that's mismanagement to an extreme degree in the offseason. Like, there's nothing about that stretch where they should say, like, yep. Looks like Şengün was just an afterthought,
right.
And oh yeah, because it became very clear and apparent once they started playing good teams that oh, all right, the illusion of the being able to play positionless small ball forever has been smacked in our face. I think that's where it comes back to the players themselves and Ime Udoka figuring out exactly just how to get both those guys on the same page to where you can play. Where you can play just as well with both of them on the court. I'm not going to go through it again. I can't go through it. I can't live in that NBA where like good basketball players can't be on the court together. You can't figure out how to make it work. That's your job. That's your job as a coach, is to make it work.
That's 100% true. I keep forgetting too. Steven Adams is going to be on this team next year. So that's, you know, you're right. For a team like even yesterday's game, like the Clippers were just getting every offensive rebound and whatever they wanted in the paint. Bad Clippers were having their way in the paint. But Jalen Green, back to Jalen. Jalen Green showing that it is in there somewhere. Now, he finished the season looking more like the guy pre that stretch of really, really good basketball than he did the guy playing that great basketball. So there, once the competition level amped up, and I think some of that had to do with teams were like finally going, okay, well now we actually need a game plan for this guy.
They were throwing the
kitchen sink at him.
Yeah, yeah. So like that's part of his evolution is figuring out how to handle all of that stuff.
Right.
But also just in when you have a full complement of players, then he was doing a good job of kicking the ball out, he learned a lot of how to handle all of that. After Şengün went out and did it much better, it's just like everything else. You gotta ratchet it up a notch on every level next year.
Third one, I'll take it a step further. I'll throw Şengün in here. I'll call it the first round six. You know, they drafted Jalen and Alpi in one year, and then Jabari and Tari the next year, and then Amen Thompson and Cam Whitmore this past season. Doesn't look like there's a bust among them. You know, you drafted six guys in the first round of the last three drafts, and they all, to varying degrees, showed something this year. Like, there is something there with each of these guys. Now, Alperen Şengün might be an all-star, and Jalen Green might be as well, if he can be a little more consistent. The other guys, it remains to be seen what their ceiling is, but at the very least, they're all very useful pieces in a rotation for an NBA team. I don't know how many of them are going to be long-term rockets. The salary cap doesn't, if they're all good players, it's hard to keep everybody together without paying an exorbitant luxury tax. But it looks like at least among this group of six, they all got better during the season, and there's not a single one of the six that I don't feel like is an NBA player, like a capable NBA player.
Let me ask you this, Sean. Is the lottery is May 12th. The Rockets have the Nets pick right now, so that's ninth to finish the season, headed into the lottery.
Yep.
There's a 20.3% chance of landing in the top four, a 4.5% chance of landing number one. Yep. Is this the least you've cared or been invested in the lottery in the last several years?
In the last 3 years, for sure.
Yeah.
Because the Rockets had a high pick in each of these last, like a virtually guaranteed high pick in the
if you got any cold envelope theories, the Rockets would be right at the top of suspects. They've done pretty damn well with it for themselves with random chance. Good job.
Yeah.
Good job, Rockets.
It's right. It's amazing how similar the arcs of the Texans and the Rockets have been the last few years.
Yeah.
Because I think like the feelings about the Rockets mirror the feelings about the Texans. I'm not saying they're exactly the same. The Texans won a playoff game. The Rockets didn't make the playoffs. But in terms of the general overall feeling about things like the direction of the team compared to the last 3 years where you just couldn't wait for the season to be over with, and now you head into the offseason, like, can't wait for the next season to get here. I'm excited the Texans are just back in the building lifting weights today, you know, like that kind of thing. I think similarly, when September and October roll around, I'm going to be super excited for the Rockets. Your question about the draft is similar to how I feel, the way I feel about the draft for the Rockets is the same way I feel about the draft for the Texans, which is I'm excited to kick back and watch the draft at large. And then when it comes time for the Texans to make picks, I'll be super interested in that. Like, and it's another chance to improve the team. I think where the fork in the road is probably just a function of the two sports, whereas the Texans are going to draft guys, hopefully with those 2 seconds and the third, that can come in and contribute in some way. I don't even know that I want the Rockets hanging on. Well, their pick is probably going to get conveyed to Oklahoma City. In the Russell Westbrook trade, that's where the tax starts to get paid. But as you point out, they've got the Nets pick, which is a lottery pick with no conditions on it. The Rockets own that pick. They get it. I'm not even sure I want them to necessarily use that pick. I think I'd rather they use that in a trade to go get some more established guys in the offseason here.
Do you know, Sean,
young guys on the team.
Speaking of the draft and how this year it's a little bit It's a little bit underwhelming just because obviously there's no first-round pick. But a couple years ago in 2022, the Texans drafted back or they're traded back from their original spot in the first round.
Yeah.
At which point they could have drafted Jordan Davis.
Yep.
Who ended up going to the Eagles. They could have drafted Kyle Hamilton.
Yeah, good player.
Who ended up going to the Ravens. Ended up having a really, really good year last year. Or they could have ended up drafting Kenyon Green, which is who they ended up drafting.
You know I wanted Kyle Hamilton. Why are you doing this to me?
You know, Jordan Davis and Kyle Hamilton have been much better players than Kenyon Green. And, yes, Kyle Hamilton was a Golden Domer, somebody that you really, really wanted. There's a chance that Texans regional scout Colin Cowherd he might be to blame, Sean. This is Colin Cowherd last week explaining something that he says that he was impressed by the Texans doing a couple years ago.
Houston has turned around a shipwreck in a year and a half based on smart people making really smart moves. Do you know that they reached out to me? This is people that do their homework. So I did an interview with Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton at my house, because he was on a podcast network.
Okay.
The Houston Texans saw it, literally reached out to me. And they're like, hey, do you got 5 minutes? What were your interpretations of him as a human being? So I wrote him an email on the strange this or that. But I thought to myself, that's somebody that now Baltimore went and got him. But the Texans literally reached out and they were like, you spent 35 minutes with him. What were your interpretations? They just wanted information from any source. Yeah. And I was like, that's real homework.
It's Cowherd. Cowherd told them that he was a bum behind the scenes or something,
bastard,
man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The comp is Cam Chancellor.
Okay.
I love that he wrote up a report. You know, the Texans just want to know if he was a bum or something. Like, was he treating your staff like crap? Did he sexually harass one of the PAs or something? Yeah, it's just like, oh, that guy, he's probably great breaks on the ball in zone coverage.
I don't know. I don't know whose job it was to stop calling Colin Cowherd. That's my request to the Texans. Stop calling Colin Cowherd. That is that is a major flex by Cowherd right there.
Especially like that was right around the time where he would have been talking about how the Texans can't do anything right.
Yeah.
I would love to know exactly how he thought about it at the moment when the Texans called him. Like, was he like, these clowns can't even figure out make their own
or he liked player. This backs up your theory on all this. He may have liked at that point liked Kyle Hamilton better than he liked the Texans, and he's like, you know what? I am going to do the kid a solid, and I'm going to tell the Texans a bunch of lies about him, and they will trade back and draft perhaps a Kenyon Green instead of a Kyle Hamilton. God, Cowherd, jerk.
Do you think he lied about Kyle Hamilton, or do you think he gushed with praise and then got offended when the Texans traded back out of a position to draft? Like, he was probably watching the draft and thinking, whoa, boy, here we go. This is where my praise for Kyle Hamilton's really going to come in. You know, when the Texans trade back, he might have been insulted in that moment.
You know as well as anybody how badly I wanted Kyle Hamilton on this team. This is how I sleep at night on the whole Kyle Hamilton thing.
Yeah.
My thought is that in that 2022 season, Kyle Hamilton would have probably made a play or two. It might have flipped a game or two for the Texans.
That's true,
And they would not have been in position to draft C.J. Stroud.
That would have been really dumb to draft a viable football player at that point.
Yeah. You want to draft somebody like Kenyon Green, who's going to allow pass rushers to come right up the middle on Davis Mills and make sure that you can go get Davis Mills' replacement with the second overall pick.
We tried like hell to trade back to 43 after we traded back to 13, but we just couldn't get there, damn it.
Yep. So that's how I sleep at night with that. Damn you, Cowherd. That's good audio, Seth. Oh,
I'll have to go. I'll go back and try to find the original interview that he did with him and see if I can catch any vibes.
Any red flags? Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.